seen the clothes hangers with the smoldering rags of what had been her clothes. And I remember seeing my old wind-up train, and I remember how nice everybody was. So concerned, so cared. I remember my father always made the best out of the worst of situations. He helped people for so many years. And he just, he could always find humor in anything. He was like my daddy's mother. Father Dewey. God, the day he died, he cracked a joke. He just everything was, he took things, he was very philosophical. Still is, my dad is, about life. He takes it one day at a time. I got him to wear suspenders like I do. And he sort of looks, he's a real character. He comes over and sets up a report. That's what he's probably called about then. One time, my daddy was a kind-hearted person, and we had a garden out back, and beside that garden was an old crabapple tree, and it was a crabapple tree, and there was a blue jay nest down. There's an old story about the prettiest ain't always the best. I mean, you know, like the crow is not very pretty, but if you ever watch them, they're awful nice to each other. They're mannerly among themselves, and one of the prettiest is the blue jay, and he's one of the meanest. My daddy picked up the two little baby, it was two that fell out of the nest. He got on a ladder, got up there, and that mama ate him. I'll never forget him. He was sitting up there, the birds pecking him, and all he was doing was saving their meat. But he always looked at the, he got him back in the nest, though. Another great thing we would do with my dad, it was like my Aunt Mamie's husband, Rob. He loved to take a ride. It's a tradition up there. They take a ride on a Sunday afternoon, or maybe a lazy Sunday afternoon, and you turn down a road and you'd say, "Well, Rob, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going down the end of this road." But I don't know, but he said, another one that you would say, he'd say, "Well, Rob, where are you going?" And he said, "Well, I don't know, but we'll find out pretty soon." But my daddy, we'd always take a ride, and what we would do is was always a surprise. We'd get, remember the little Scotch coolers? They were round coolers.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they were sort of popular in the early 50s. Or we used to have a double cola, which is very Tennessee. There's still double cola. It's a yellow metal coolers. They used to be metal. So we'd get some Coca-Colas, then put some ice in there, and we'd take off. And we'd be riding after a while. My daddy'd say, "Well, let's have a weenie roast." And so we'd stop at some store and get some weenies and maybe some, we didn't even tear them with us, some carry them with us, or some mustard as well as, and stop and build a fire on the side of the road someplace, or up in the country someplace, and cook our weenies over the, and then he'd tell us a story or two. We always had a good time. The Campbellites, yeah, that's what he calls, because of, Campbell was the man that started the Church of Christ, he calls them Campbellites. One time, we had a black lady that worked for our family. Oh, by the way, there was a black man named Landis who I loved. Oh my gosh, he was a handyman around our community, and he had two mules and a wagon. And he was a farmer, priest, but he would to pick extra money. He would like come and plow a garden for you or something like that. And Landis was my favorite person. Whenever I could hear his old wagon coming up the road, the stone road, there was a wooden bridge down from us. And when I heard it hit that bridge, I was on my feet and on the run. Because this old colored man, as we called him back then, black man, I loved him. He was like an uncle to me. He would come up and I'd ride beside him, man, and hold the mule, the reins. And I felt like, you know, I was really touched up. And Mom would always feed him. We'd always, of course, he'd eat dinner with us and sat and, he used to tell stories. Gosh, he could tell some tall stories. And this black lady that worked for us, though, and she worked at the house and helped Mama out, and golly, she was, she was arrested for something, and, she wasn't arrested, she was a witness in some sort of a case. And so I think she was being cross-examined, and a woman in the past that probably invited them too much. Historically, had done a lot of inviting, and the cross-examining lawyer said to her, called her by her name, "Mary, are you sure you were drinking that day?" "No, sir, I don't drink no more." "Now, Mary, now you telling us that you don't drink anymore, you know, you've had a lot of problems in the past." "No, sir, I don't drink no more." Said, "In fact, Mr. Lane, Mr. George, I work up there with Mr. George." And he said they had liquor all up the stairs and all up in their attic, and said, "I never touched a drop of it." And that was all over town. Daddy didn't know about it, and they'd say, "Hey, George, how about a drink?" Well, the thing was, my daddy had the cheese plant, and at Christmas, my daddy didn't drink. But at Christmas time, people would give him liquor, so he'd
pile right up.
If he drank anything, was beer. He just not know what he'd. That was a funny story. It was all over. "George, how about a drink? Hey, okay, hey, got a bottle of liquor you can spare? You know, liquor's quicker, beer's dear." But, oh, Lord. Edgar Allan, my daddy knows everything Edgar Allan Poe was ever, and he can recite it. He loves, of course, he loves Poe. Republicans, he said, "Daddy, what about Republicans?" He said, "Well, you know, all our family's Yellow Dog Democrats." I said, "What's that mean?" He said, "They'd vote for a Yellow Dog before they'd vote for a Republican." And I said, "Well, what about Republicans?" He said, "Well, I was 10 before I ever heard the word. I was 14 before I could spell it, and 21 before I saw my first one." Let's see. You know what a slop jar is?
Slop jar? No.
Well, you know what a chamber pot is?
Sure.
Same thing. It's a Tennessee term. You said thunder bucket, but it was what you put beside the, you know, so at night you didn't have to make that long cold walk out to the outdoor plumbing. Coal oil, you know what coal oil is?
For lamps?
Yeah, but what it is, it's kerosene. We call it coal. We didn't call it. I didn't know what coal oil was until I came to Florida. Fayetteville, Tennessee has a phenomenal thing to this day. There are three pool rooms on the square, the oldest of which opened about the turn of the century. These have been masculine domains. They've been men only. The women came only in the front to buy food and leave. It was just the way things were. A little different these days. But in the back, they had pool rooms, pool tables. Now, the town of Fayetteville, like so many southern towns, is laid out on the square. You know, north, south, east, west, the town faces this courthouse, which is in the center. And the Fayetteville's courthouse is the fifth one to be there. The first one was built in 1809. This last one they tore down. The one they've got there is now is a colonial reproduction. Now, are you ready for this? They tore down an 1870 brick building to build this. And the guy that was hired to tear down the old place almost went broke taking it down because it was so well built.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the town faces the courthouse, and there's parking in the square there. Fayetteville's a very prosperous little town, but the square is still really active there. They've got all the, they like Arcadia, they've got a strip of McDonald's and all that kind of stuff, but local stores still do good there. In fact, one of the local stores, the Wright store, closed recently, and it's been open since 1830. And they said the marks on the big massive oaken and ashwood counters, some of them were Indians that come and cried out knives, you know, cut notches when they were trying out knives. But anyway, there are three pool rooms, and it's sort of a unique situation. In Lincoln County, they have what they call a pool room slaw that they put on the hamburger, and it's made of cabbages diced fine with sugar, mustard, and vinegar. And it makes sort of a sweet, sour cabbage slaw, and they put that on their hamburgers. But what I want to tell you, in the back of the pool rooms, the farmers come in and they'll drink coffee or whatever, cold drinks, Dr. Pepper, used to be Double Cola, Sun Drop, which is very popular in Central Tennessee, and Coca-Cola, Pepsi, maybe some ROC Colas, as they call them. In the back, there are tables, and the men play dominoes. Either they play dominoes, checkers, or there's another game they play. Mostly it's dominoes and checkers. And then there are the pool tables, and then there's sort of a lattice work in the front for the counter. All the pool rooms are basically designed with old floors in them and old manual pinball machines. No frozen hamburger patties. All three of them buy their meat fresh every morning, early in the morning. One of them opens at 3 because of the factory shift. And they beat it out with a piece of marble, the hamburger, and they throw it on the grill, and they fry the hamburger. And then they take a fresh bun and they put it and put the cold pool room slaw with diced with onions. And then they put it in a
bag.
No, it's a thing that toasts, a toastmaster that toasts, comes down on toast the top, the bottom, top of the bun and the bottom of the bun, and they wrap it up and sell it to you for 65 cents.
My God.
And it's still the same. I mean, they also serve stew, this homemade stew every day, and homemade vegetable soup. And the farmers will come in and get coffee or iced tea. And this one pool room there on the south side of the square goes through something like 20 or 30 gallons of iced tea. McDonald's and Crystal's have come into that town and had trouble. KFC went out of business twice there. because people still have this habit of going to the pool room. One of the oldest pool rooms was owned by a black guy off the side of the square there, and he was an entrepreneur to end all entrepreneurs. Papa said he could remember that this black guy about lunchtime every day, and that's Yankee for dinner. About lunchtime every day, he would put on a big old skillet of onions, and then he'd take a fan and blow them out. Now this is right after the turn of the century. Take an old Emerson fan and blow the smell out on the sidewalk, and boy, everybody get hungry because they smell those fried onions. Hamburgers when Daddy was a boy were a nickel. Cokes were a nickel. We called them dopes.
Why do they call them dopes?
Because Coca-Cola had cocaine in it until the Pure Food and Drug Administration came in, and it was a Southern expression. The first Coca-Cola bottling plant, not where the first, where it was invented, was in Chattanooga. The first outside plant was in Chattanooga. I've been to the Hamilton Square there and seen it many times, the plaque there. My Double Cola was big, which is another Chattanooga-based drink. It's only sold, I think, in 15 states. Now, the Wish Book, that's what they called, catalog, Sears catalog. Saturday, he said they definitely had baths on Saturday. He said that for a good reason. He said that it was hard to take a bath then because you had to heat water, and he said that the kitchen was heated up and you would take your bath on Saturday. He said during the summer you went swimming all the time, you know. Wasn't any problem. Haircuts in the front yard. Dinner at noon, not lunch. Spit baths is what they took the rest of the week. Come in with a basin and wash all over with a basin, and then throw the water out. They use those. They had winter shoes. They had, of course, candy taffy pools, which would people get together. They'd have, camping out. They said squirrel and rabbit, snap shooting, a slingshot. Snap shooting is like a slingshot. Hunting possums, tracking with dogs, bird hunting, creek seining. They used to go seine the creek for fish. They go creek seine.
Seine.
A seine is a clear, like a net that you. It's a seine net.
Okay.
Seine net. In the hills and hollows of South Central Tennessee, there was always something to do. He said they never had enough time to do everything there was to do. Halloween tricks, he said there were no treats in, so he said they put buggies on and wagons on barns. He said they'd turn over outhouses. He said it was honest fun, and they always get back and cleaned up whatever they'd done later, but they said they had a lot of fun doing it, burning down somebody's outhouse. fun, you know, said they had fun helping each other. So there were taffy pulls and barn raisings and square dances and hay rides and ice cream socials and all-day sings and dinners on the ground after church. There was, they said they played baseball, horseshoes. They said they would hide and go seek. He said there was always something to do. They said they played a lot of sandlot football, baseball. They didn't call it that. They just played baseball. Hard work, food, and fun. He said there's syrup making time, hog killing time, there was wheat thrashing time, there was barn raising times. He said there was harvest time. And then he told me about the Jeff, the little locomotive that they used to have from up Alabama. He said he can remember the train stopping so the engineers would get water from a spring to make coffee. Or they'd stop to go hunting. The engineers stopped to go hunting. But they ran on a schedule. It was a branch line. Country ham, side meat, curing. These are things that my family still do. Syrup making, canning, and other foods. Milk gravy. My daddy's nickname was Captain, also Amos, because he was an M-man in college minstrels. Wow. His nickname was Amos. Which is, of course, you don't do that anymore because, God forbid, it may offend some ethnic group. But they did it then. And I asked him, what did they call black people? He said, darky. He said, they had black, they had colored neighbors. They called them, the word darkies, he said, but nigger was not a very common word. He said, that was they called them darkies or colors. He said, you know, but there wasn't a lot of segregation then because there wasn't a lot of socializing. I mean, they just, everybody worked, you know what I mean? In town, you know, nobody went to, they did everything at home. They played, I told you about Landis. Told you about, let's say, his way through college. He worked his way through college. Worked as a farmhand in return. He said never. My daddy brought me up to be, not to be proud, and to like people, and never make fun of anybody. Whenever I'd say, look at that shack over there, daddy, he said, that shack's somebody's home, son. I remember saying that many, many times. He loved his love for the simple life, the common man, the Christian, Southern manners and style. He really thought, he thinks manners are an important part of upbringing. He said, one of his favorites, said, we may be poor, but he said, we're honest and clean and well-fed. Another one of his favorite expressions, all you've got, son, is your word and how you use it. Everything else is just loan to you. The first, he talked hard paved roads, hard surface roads, if we remember them building that. He said, never recommend a restaurant or a woman or a hunting dog. This is going to be in the book, by the way. I did go ahead and copyright some of my stuff. Oh, by the way, I'll show you that and what I did. I'll show you how to copyright your stuff, by the way, if you don't know how to. And he said, you best leave matchmaking to God. when loaning something, think of it as a gift, and then you won't be surprised when you don't get it back. Won't be mad when you don't get it back. Never judge people by the car or its tag. Hard work and determination are the cures for poverty. Never did, can't, never will. That was drummed in our head. Prayer is better. Prayer is better than bear or headache or pain. Can't, never did, won't, never will. That was it. Can't, never did, won't, never did. I said, I wouldn't have in my hand when somebody would, what you've got in your mouth. Somebody would say,
swear
it.
Again?
Yeah. Said, don't call on God's name unless you got something to say. I've got tons of these. I've got a whole thing. But when I get down, the difference between a hollow and a cove. We have coves and hollows. And I've got dozens and dozens of definitions. I've shared with you on the tape just some of the stuff about my daddy. Very close and very tender, because I know I'm going to lose him, one of these days. And he knows it. We've talked about it. He doesn't have any regrets. I think my daddy is perfectly ready and willing to go. His regret, of course, would be leaving us and Mama behind. But I've heard him say many times that he's had a very good life. I guess somebody else would look at his life, and they would say it was quite varied. When he was born, the state of transportation was steam. The ultimate in communication, Marconi really hadn't done anything yet, was the telegraph. The public transportation was either electric streetcar or mule-drawn streetcar. Electricity, we had light bulbs and we had fans since the 1880s. But basically, we were in transition from the industrial steam age into the modern age. And so, he thinks he lived in probably the most interesting time in our history. We survived two wars and a depression. President has stepped down for the first time. A man has been to the moon. The marvels of the atom, of the nuclear power. He's seen all the TVA dams built. He saw that where the poor man wasn't able to afford electricity in Tennessee, TVA came in and provided ready kilowatt wouldn't do. TVA did, and the electrification of Tennessee, and they stopped the erosion and saved Tennessee from washing down the Tennessee Valley. Tennessee, I've been all over this country, is probably one of the prettiest states. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got three distinct states. There's East, West, and Central. East Tennessee were Republicans and stayed loyal to the Union during the Civil War. And remember, Andrew Jack Johnson was from East Tennessee. He was a senator from East Tennessee. The state suffered through the trial, the Trail of Tears and Indian Wars and Civil Wars and World Wars and, you know, yet its people are unique. We had our racial problems. Clinton, Tennessee. Roots was written by a Tennessean. Buford Pusser was from Tennessee, so Carroll's met Buford Pusser. Jack Daniels was from Tennessee. Now, I want to tell you something. You look on every bottle of whiskey, and you're only going to find two. Yes, ma'am?
Why don't y'all wash up glass?
Okay. Turn off.
Expensive machine, right?
Hi, would you like that in the future?
You can have a $29.95 General Electric.
That's figure. Right.
Here we go.
See on what I get paid.
Okay. Where did they come from? Okay.
We're in 1880.
By the 1880s, there had been habitation in this area for about 30 years. The first real recorded habitation or any kind of involvement in Lanier was the old camp meetings that were held out at the Pine Level Campground, which became known as Pine Level Campground. There's a cemetery out there. Dates back to the 1850s. In fact, it's the second oldest, Steve, cemetery in the area, the oldest being over Bradenton, which was then called Manatee. So there had been habitation here, white men, we're talking about, since the 1850s, till about after the war between the states. In about 1867, then Manatee County was created from old Hillsborough. Manatee County was 5,000 square miles. It ran from the Gulf of Mexico to Lake Okeechobee, north of what is now Polk County, and south of what is now Lee and Hendry County. It was a massive county, much larger than the state of Rhode Island, and its population was under 1,000. Why did they move the first courthouse, and there's a replica of the county's first courthouse at the Manatee County Historical Commission's Historical Park that I gave you the address of earlier, but there were scarcely just a few hundred people in the county. Now, the Gamble Mansion had already been built on the north side of the river, and the early settlement had lived through the Civil War and the blockade and all the problems afterwards, and things settled down after the war during Reconstruction. So that the fathers came back, the county commissioner said, we have got a lot of habitation, we've got a lot of settlement up through the Peace River Valley, called Pease Creek in those days, and we need, you know, this is after the first and second and even the third Seminole War, so the Indians have been taken care of. Either they're out west or they're down in the deep Everglades over near Okeechobee, where lands. So now it's wide open. The only enemy to white man at this time is going to be the fleas and the ticks and the mosquitoes and the gnats and the elements and unchecked disease. So they decide that they got to have a courthouse in more of the center part of the county. So they did a survey and they came to choose a site and somewhat the geographic center of the county at the time, not even really close to any kind of waterways, called Pine Level. And if you've ever been out there, if you ever go there, you'll know why it's called Pine Level. It's just a slight rise, and it just happens to be 2 miles north, or a mile north, or about a mile south, over Buzzard's Roost from the old campground meeting place and cemetery. Now, you know what the campground was?
That's
where the Baptists and the Methodists, because there wasn't enough people to have a church, would get together for 2 weeks a year for baptizing and preaching and singing and all the things that they would do before there was a real and organized church. So they'd have a get-together every year. So the area they already knew roughly where about the area, the land was abundant with game. There were wild wolves and bear. You could live off the land. They say you could even plant a broomstick and it would grow. It was a fertile land, but it was a wilderness land. There were some from the archives when I was doing some research on the Peace River Valley. There were several expeditions, military expeditions in the area before the Civil War, the war between the states. One in the early 1860s to test the the navigability of the Peace River up to Central Florida. They thought it might hook up with the St. John's River. Of course, they ran into the rapids up at Zolfo. The reason why I mention this is that they found several cabins were mentioned in those notes, rude cabins along the river. So we know that there were people. They built a log cabin here in 1867 or 1868. It's on the sheet that I gave you. I can't remember the exact date.
Sure.
And it was a crude structure at most. The famous Sarasota Vigilantes case was held here. It was so bad. The fleas were so bad, this was during Reconstruction, right at the end of Reconstruction, that they had to move the trial outside because of the fleas. So it was pine level, and the early inhabitants of the county were mostly white, Anglo-Saxon, and definitely Protestant. They were people from that drifted into Florida or North Florida. They either moved here from North Florida, they moved from Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and later Tennessee. The Tennesseans mostly came and went with military expeditions, the military that came and went. So here we are, the legislature in its wisdom decides in 1887, May 19th to be exact, that Manatee County needs to be divided into a new county. So they took what is now Sarasota Manatee and made it Manatee County, and then they took what is now DeSoto, Hardy, Highlands, Charlotte, and Glades counties and created a new county called DeSoto. Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So the new county commission decided to leave the courthouse at Pine Level, which was a town of nearly 1,000 in the area. We're not talking about there wasn't,
skyscrapers.
There was nothing but crude wooden buildings there because everything had to be hauled in by ox cart, two-wheel ox cart. But there was a town out there with a doctor and a newspaper and a lawyer and all kinds of, basic services because it was the county seat. So they moved all the records, the old records, to Manatee County, and DeSoto County set up its own. 18 months later, the railroad by this time has been built down through the Peace River Valley from up at Bartow, and it comes on the east side of the river and misses Pine Level, and so Pine Level dies because Arcadia, named after Arcadia Allbritton, a 12-year-old girl who baked a cake for Boss Henry, the man who was one of the first settlers here, the man who Henry County is named after, named the city after Arcadia. That's one of the stories. That was before that was known as Tater Hill Bluff or Waldron's Landing. Arcadia had officially been established as a post office in November 1883, about the same time that phosphate was discovered on the lower Peace River. A lot of things happened all at once. The courthouse was moved to Arcadia 18 months after the conception of the county. That means that in 1888, the courthouse was moved to Arcadia. The railroad had arrived in Arcadia. Arcadia had become a posting and banking and cultural center. It was a wide open western town with wooden sidewalks and showdowns on the main street. There were cattle wars going on the prairie. There was not a fence on any part of the country. In fact, Florida was the last state to have a mandatory fencing law, and that didn't come until World War II. So it was a boom town. Then phosphate mining is starting, and there's phosphate 12 phosphate mining operations between Arcadia and South Down and near Charlotte Harbor. There were hundreds of men that came here to work in the phosphate. The phosphate ore was mined from the river bottom, and this was before they found the big mother lode, the groundlocked imperial lodes of Polk County. So the town was booming. I mean, my gosh, people were coming from everywhere here. It was like a western gold town rush. I mean, there was jobs and opportunity and a boom here, and more white Anglo-Saxon Protestants came, and the black people had arrived. In fact, the first child born, not documented, but the first child born in Arcadia, back after when it became Arcadia, between the time it was Waldron's Landing, later Tater Hill Bluff, because it was...
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, Tater Hill Bluff, and I can show you where the docks were for Tater Hill Bluff. They just left them. The first child was a black child, they say. And so the black people came, too, at the end of Reconstruction, they had come here to work and labor, and they provided much of the labor. A lot of the blacks came from Alabama. I've done a lot of studies with the black people. I have a lot of friends, and we've traced the relatives to Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia, and North Florida. It was a lot of their labor, my friend, that built this town. I mean, literally built this town, maintained the railroads and worked. So the black people and most of the white people, with little exception, this is a WASP town. In fact, it's just been in recent years that we have any kind of a Catholic church. Now we have a pretty good sized one, but that's because, so it's been, it was a Baptist Methodist sort of a town. Now let's go back to, remember I told you about the, let's go back. I told you that the Baptist and Methodist met together in a camp meeting. Well, apparently the Methodists got enough to organize a church, and they organized the first church in the area. It was called the Pine Level United Methodist Church, which is still in existence today. In fact, it's even growing today. An old, wooden, beautiful wooden church out in the ghost town site of Pine Level near the historical marker. Then shortly after that, the Baptists organized their first church here. The Methodist and the Baptist were the first churches here, and then they were followed shortly by the Presbyterians. The Episcopal Church was formed here in about 1895. The first building was built. So we know what the spiritual influence is. It's Baptist and Methodist. We got white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and we have blacks that are mostly, many of them are liberated slaves. That are in Arcadia. There's very little other influence for many, many years. Well, then, on top of the phosphate boom, coming to the railroad, the relocation of the county seat, the incorporation of Arcadia, the creation of a new county. There's all kinds of other stuff going on in the 1880s. Wauchula is incorporated. Zoffo Springs is incorporated. Fort Ogden is incorporated. Even Bowling Green is incorporated. Punta Gorda is incorporated. In fact, it's December the 7th, 1887, that Punta Gorda is formed. So the county is growing. And by 1920, the county's population, of course, there are 3,000 square miles, is 25,000. The legislature decides to, and by the way, at this point, DeSoto County had one of the most modern school systems in the state of Florida. And I can take you out and show you many of the fine brick schools at the time. Okay, the railroads have extended over. By 1920, the railroad has then gone down through Sebring, which was formed in 1912, Avon Park, which was formed in 1886, down to Lake Placid, and Venus, down to Moorhaven, and all the railroad is in that part of the county. And by 1912, they've also built a railroad called the Charlotte Harbor and Northern, CHNN, from near Mulberry in Polk County, south through the western portion of the Peace River Valley into DeSoto County, or into Arcadia and down to Boca Grande on Gasparilla Island to the deep water port. So you've got a railroad. Then they're building a railroad at this time between, they built a railroad in 1915 between here and Bradenton. And they're planning to build one at 1920 between Fort Ogden and Sarasota, in which they did build. And they built another direct line from here to Fort Myers, missing Punta Gorda. So Arcadia by 1920 had 8 trains north and 8 trains south today. The town had burned on Thanksgiving Day, 1905, and it ended. It was the beginning of a new Arcadia and the ending of a lifestyle. The cattle wars had died, and a new modern city grew up from that fire. No life was lost, although 44 buildings were burned and millions of dollars worth of in modern money and damage was caused. Everything was lost in the main part of the city. So a new city, as you, many of those buildings, most of those buildings on the main street today were built between 1905, Thanksgiving Day 1905, and 1920. 1920 is the beginning of the Roaring Twenties. It's also the just about the beginning of the land boom. During World War I, Arcadia, before 1920, had 2 air bases, Door and Carlstrom Fields, and they had trained airplane pilots, World War II fighter pilots here. So, I mean, we had military training facilities here before 1920. And that was a good exposure for our county to a lot of outsiders who were to come back later. They would either retire here or come back after the war. 1920, the legislature had taken on a very difficult decision. There's been a lot of pressure to change, to create a new county. Senator Frank Cooper from the county had really had a lot of pressure to create the new county, because towns like Punta Gorda, Sebring, Avon Park, Lake Placid and such were booming. Wauchula, they were growing, all themselves and becoming, you know, independent. They had rail service, and even roads were being built, hard surface roads. The Dixie Highway was being talked about and being built. Even as early as when Governor Gilchrist from Punta Gorda, the early part of the century, there was talk about dividing the county. By 1921, April 1921, they divided it into five brand new counties. DeSoto County, now only 700 square miles, was created along with Hardy, Highlands, Glades, and Charlotte. Interesting. DeSoto County has not regained its population that it had in 1920. Of course, it's much smaller. We will reach that mark by 1990 again. Now, Charlotte County has over 100,000 people. Highlands County is not far behind it. Now, we're slightly bigger in population than DeSoto County. We've got about 23,500. And I know the county really well. My wife was in charge of doing the census in 1980, so she got to go down every alley when she trained her people. Okay, and then the smallest county, which is under 10,000, and one of the most rural counties in South Florida, is Glades County. Interesting, Hardy County is still dry. It's the only dry county in South Florida. There are several up in the Panhandle. World War II came along, and we built two very large air bases, Dorr and Carlstrom Fields. We trained a passel of English, British pilots, and a lot of Americans came from here. Arcadia has a British cemetery. 23 British flyers are buried out in Oak Ridge Cemetery. Why did they bury them here? The British do not take their dead home. And the Arcadia Rotary Club has maintained those graves and holds annual services every year, which attracts people from all over the world. The British... another thing I'd like to mention, though, that during World War II, there wasn't a single casualty from either air base. All these pilots were killed while training at other bases in Southwest Florida. Once again, that brought outsiders, new people that liked it. A lot of people that are here now came here to discover the county and state. Of course, the land boom of the 20s brought in a whole new batch of people that were to come here. And then something happened in 1950. Their label stores operations in Nocatee brought in a lot of workers, a lot of them.
Naval stores.
It was a great big plant that made naphtha and stuff like that in Turpentine over in Nocatee. It's no longer in the 50s. It brought in a whole new, and plus, then Central Maloney Transformer, a division of Cold Industries, opened their plant here in 1958 or 59, 30 years ago. They just manufactured their millionth electrical transformer here. They brought a lot of people into the county from Arkansas. And but basically, by and large, and of course there's been a lot, now we have a lot of winter residents from all over, you can see tags, but basically DeSoto County, unlike all the counties around us, is a southern, with more than 50% of the county born and raised here. I have a list of names in here that we, as chairman of the Centennial, that I gathered that just volunteers to come in, people who lived in the county for more than 50 years. That's page after page after page of people that are going to become members of the new Sunbank DeSoto Pioneers Club that I set up. The bank's going to have an annual meeting and their certificate and all. We also, you saw that I published in there this inventory of old businesses that we honored at a special chamber thing. And of course, I've done a hardback book on the first hardback book, but a pictorial history of the county. And of course, I have just recently been working with the Division of Archives, providing them with a lot of old photographs of the county. I gave you a lot of addresses and names of people, not only here, but all over Southwest Florida, as excellent contacts. But let me tell you something. Arcadia was an incorporated city with street lights, a streetcar. And a telephone system and an ice plant when Miami was a little bitty village with sandy, unpaved streets.
Yeah,
Arcadia was a population center with a hospital when Fort Myers didn't even have a doctor because, see, Henry Plant, the railroad tycoon, hated Fort Myers. So the railroad ended in Punta Gorda from 1886 until 1903, until he no longer owned it. It was only then that he extended it south. Thomas Alva Edison, who stayed here many, many times on his trips to Fort Myers to his home and laboratories, Henry Ford, Harvey Firestone, stayed downtown here at the Arcadia House, of which half of it's still steady. In fact, I'll tell you something, Steve. As they rode through the Cowtown, as it's called by Sabers these days, which is still a hub of transportation because of it's at the intersection of state roads 31, 70, 74, and U.S. 17. When Thomas Alva Edison rode down the valley on his way to Punta Gorda and to Fort Myers, he saw many of the buildings that are still here today. He saw the courthouse and the depot, which we just were able to get saved. Now, most of the roads have been removed since then. The air bases across from is now G. Pierce Wood State Mental Hospital, a non-forensic, non-fenced, voluntary hospital with 1,000 patients, and the cross door is now a minimum security prison. State is the biggest employer here with an annual payroll of $25.6 million. Citrus is a $200 million industry. Cattle is a $50 million industry. Soda County is the fifth largest producer of citrus and cattle in the state of Florida. It is a major producer of watermelons. In fact, we have a watermelon festival here each May, and it has the state's oldest and largest rodeo in March and in July. It's called, in the 58th year this year. The other large rodeo, of course, is the Silver Spurs over at our sister cow town, Kissimmee.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about, remember when you used to have the labels that used to be on the sides of the fruit boxes? Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that has a collection of those from the old days and stuff?
Yeah, there are several. I think Howard Sarles has one, Sarles Brothers Packing. By the way, I'll tell you something else you'll notice. In the 20s, before that marvelous invention of frozen concentrate, of course, fruit was either canned or shipped fresh. There were 25 citrus packing plants in this county. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, the last packing house closed. Now it's all either shipped to Tropicana or to one of the other orange juice concentrate plants. Things have even changed in the citrus business. Central Maloney Transformer now employs 350 people and has an annual payroll of $5 million. The tourism is another $8 million business, and most of what that's confined to is five RV parks that brings in snowbirds here during the colder months from all over the country to enjoy DeSoto County's warm weather and really low cost of living.
Is it Charles Sorrell?
No, his name is Howard Sarles.
Howard
and
Sarles. Where is he? Is he in Arcadia?
Yeah, he's in the phone book.
Is there anybody else along those lines?
Well, I think he would probably be Charlie Harrison.
Charlie Harrison.
Nice guy. Owns Turner Harrison Farms. He may know somebody, although he hadn't been in the business himself that long. Maybe one of his partners and all might know.
Is he getting an Arcadia?
Yes. 494-4777.
777.
And there's a bunch of others. Now, as I mentioned to you earlier, there's several big cattle families, including the Wells, and there's several Wells, W-E-L-L-E-S. In fact, DeSoto National Bank originally was the Wells Bank, and it opened in June 1907 and has been open ever since. Currently has assets, a Sun Bank DeSoto with assets of more than $50 million. But it's not the county's largest bank.
Okay, Mr. Newberry, who did the carving of the ox carts,
mm-hmm.
Are there a lot of pieces of his stuff around? Or
no.
Are there some?
Oh, there's some, but I wouldn't know where to look.
Does he have family, kin?
All kinds. Phone books, and they're all kin to him.
What was his first name that we heard?
I have to look it up.
Yeah, because what I was told was like under that tree that has the fence around it by the railroad.
Tree of Knowledge. The third tree of knowledge has been built there. It's grown there, yeah.
And then down by Tom Gaskins, at least this is what the Tom Gaskins in Palmdale told me now, down by his dad's general store, this is where they would do a lot of whittling and stuff like that. And then there was a real tradition for that in the
community. Well, yeah, it's like the town I was from in Tennessee. We had a whittler's bench where people sat and they would whittle, not necessarily make anything now. They would just whittle wood away.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's bring you up to date. Sauter County now finds itself in the 1980s, a pocket of resistance to the boom and bust on the coast. They were just crawling crazy on the coast. I mean, when I moved to Florida in 54 to Charlotte County, there was no Port Charlotte at all. It was a cow pasture. The county had less than 5,000 people. Punta Gorda had less than 2,000 people. There are over 100,000 people in the county. Fort Myers and Lee County had less than 30,000 people. There was no Cape Coral, no Lehigh Acres, no Marco Island Resort. I mean, Southwest Florida, all seven counties had less than 100,000 people. Now it's the fastest growing area in America. And politically, it's rapidly becoming the most politically powerful area in the state of Florida. It's going to be not too long before Southwest Florida, if you really, the real Southwest Florida starts with, from Tampa, St. Petersburg, if you really want to be technical about it, and say south. But what we call Southwest Florida is Manatee, Sarasota, Charlotte, Lee, Collier, Hendry, Glades, Highlands counties. That is real Southwest Florida. I mean, when we came to Fort Myers, to Southwest Florida, Fort Myers had just put a TV station, WINK, on the air. Fort Myers has five TV stations now. Sarasota has a TV station. I mean, we've got three community colleges, two branches of the University of South Florida, a major, two major, but a major regional airport. We're going to get a lot of attention. Forgotten Southwest Florida is. And I think there are going to be some heads on some poles, too, in the process, because, I mean, we have the State Theater in Southwest Florida. We have the Oslo Theater. I mean, Sarasota is one, is the, probably the, if not the first, the second most cultured town in the state of Florida. The only culture in Tallahassee is buttermilk and cottage cheese compared to, I mean, the next United States Senator probably from Florida is going to be from Cape Coral. It's Republican, it's 50-ish, and it's growing like mad.
Yeah.
And it's ethnically, it's not, it's melting pot, but there's not a lot of Spanish. Got a lot of, and let me tell you, here are the states in Southwest Florida. You've got New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan. Those are the major northern states here.
Represented.
And then in the south, the southern state major, and the number one immigrant state in Florida is from the south, is Tennessee, according to the Division of Tourism. Then Georgia. So, I mean, it is just phenomenal. When I graduated from Fort Myers Senior High School in 1964, there were two high schools in the county that had senior classes. Others were in the process. There was a black high school, Dunbar, and a white high school called Fort Myers High School. There are six high schools there now. My class had 600 members. Cape Coral was a town of about 3,500, 4,000. Port Charlotte had about 3,000 people. There was no black, of course, integration was started in Charlotte County, but there was no black high school in Charlotte County. They were busting 25 miles to high school to Fort Myers of black people. My gosh, staggering. See, that, I mean, downtown Fort Myers was still the hub.
Yeah.
Fort Myers downtown had four theaters, they had three theaters. I mean, it was just really nice. You know, it had public transportation, just a little bit of public transportation. Go downtown, ride the bus downtown, or ride your bicycle, leave it all day. Nobody would ever hurt you, bother you.
Here's a self-interested question here, George. Were there any Greeks in this area?
Always, I mean, gosh, yeah, like, there are a lot of, not a lot of Greeks, but there were always have been Greeks. I mean, I went to school with several Greeks, and I raised with Greeks. They've all been, and guess what business they were in? Restaurant.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They're up and down.
Costello's, there are several that I went to school with in Fort Myers. I mean, more than you would think. More than you would think.
Yeah.
Very few Jews. Like, in, you know, it's like Tennessee, the Jewish people from my hometown. Every town had two or three. Dinah Shore was from my hometown. But her name wasn't Dinah Shore. We had two or three Jewish families. They usually went to a Protestant church for their kids to go to Sunday school and all. And there were very few. Now, I remember when the first Jewish temple was built in Fort Myers, the temple that fell. Always been a pretty good-sized Roman Catholic community there. But not now. It's much, much, much bigger with the Northern immigration. At two, Fort Myers at two was Methodist and Baptist. Thomas Alva Edison tried to make Fort Myers the first electrically lighted city in the United States, and the city council voted him down because they were afraid it would keep the cows away. I remember Sanibel before the causeway, when there was no construction or no summertime services there because the mosquitoes were so bad. They literally, and I'm not kidding you, tested mosquito repellent there. And now it is the vacation area. That's where every la-di-da and academist in America wants to go, and that's in place to go spend a week or a weekend during the winter to commune with nature. Punta Gorda was of course part of this county, the old county, and it was a fishing village. I gave you earlier Representative Vernon Peoples' name and his mother, Mrs. Vasco Peoples. Her people were fishermen way back to back to the time when there were Spanish fishing ranches off the coast on the islands that were really Cuban. I didn't tell you earlier, you were wondering, you know, we told you about the cattle country here where there's thousands and thousands. They would annually drive the cattle down to Punta Raza, that's where the bridge goes across to Sanibel Island, and they would load them on ships and ship them to Cuba.
Yeah.
And they were paid in gold doubloons. Punta Raza was the first place on the mainland of the United States that knew about the sinking of the Maine, because that was where the cable station was. I remember when Cape Coral was a swamp. Port Charlotte was A.C. Frizzell's cow pasture, and that Lehigh Acres was started to be a ripoff, and development was so successful that they went legit. I've seen a lot of old customs pass. I can remember though,